When I'm not practicing being a rabbi, I often wish that I was practicing as a doctor. I'm a frustrated doctor, and one of my favorite things to do during the summer when I have a lot more time on my hands is to watch reality, like real medical shows, like Trauma in the ER or Dr. Pimple Popper or these kinds of things that are really interesting to me because as a frustrated doctor, it's an opportunity for me to see real life cases and to learn. And one of the things I've always been most amazed by is the heart. Because the heart has electrical rhythms within it. And if the heart starts getting out of its beat, out of its rhythms properly, what happens is you take an electric shock, normally from some form of paddles, and you can do this externally or internally, and you shock the heart into beating into what is called a sinus rhythm, into a regular rhythm. Because if those electric rhythms are off, it's not pumping the blood properly and it throws off the entire system of the body. And often, in order to get it back as a last effort, the heart has to be shocked back into beating regularly so that a person has the possibility of recovering and regaining some level of normalcy in their healthy life. Well, that's how the human body works. But how does it work for people? You see, on November 4th, 1995, at 9:30 p.m., I saw the heart of a nation get shocked back into a sinus rhythm, if you will. In 1995, it was just 2 years, 23 years ago, 2 years after the famous Oslo Accords. And the state of Israel was divided, and it was divided deeply, and it became a painful division. There were rallies against Oslo and against Yitzhak Rabin, who 2 years before, 25 years ago, yesterday, stood on the White House lawn with Bill Clinton by his side and had the notorious handshake with Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestine Liberation Organization. They shook hands, and they thought they were dawning on what would be the beginning of a new era for all of the Middle East and perhaps humanity, that we were rewriting a narrative of the Jewish people and the Palestinian people, that we were laying the groundwork for what would be a sense of peace between the two nations, that the Palestinians would finally have a homeland of their own, and that the Israeli people could live in a homeland in safety and security with their neighbors by their side. Granted, it was a little Pollyanna-ish, kumbaya-ish, that we would now put our arms around our Palestinian neighbors that were sworn to our death, and we would sing songs and in delight. It became even more challenging when we signed agreements with Jordan and had already signed agreements with Egypt, in which peace was a lot simpler. Sadly, those extremists on the far right of both sides, Palestinians and Israelis, wanted to derail Oslo. They wanted to derail Oslo because on the Israeli side, and I'm projecting here, they had no sense of trust or security in the partner who they were making peace with. After all, Yasser Arafat, the man that Rabin reluctantly shook hands with, was a man who had blood on his hands. He was responsible and claimed responsibility for the deaths of literally thousands of Jews, Israelis living in Israel in order to reclaim his territory. He had demanded for time after time, year after year, Palestine, 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 all of Palestine will be ours. And now he suddenly changed his tune on the White House lawn with a large sum of money and incentives, and people questioned his motives. On the right side, in the Palestinian groups, were people who said, we cannot live with these Israelis who have taken our land from underneath us. It is ours. We are sworn to their destruction. We have been taught this in schools forever. This is what we believe, and we will not make peace with them. I don't want a sliver of land. I don't want 28%. I don't want the West Bank. I want Tel Aviv, Netanya, and Haifa, where my parents and grandparents were from. We don't accept this deal. The difference is that the Palestinians in 1993, after Oslo, decided to reject this ideal through terror. And sadly, there was an onslaught of terror through the streets of Israel, where soldiers and civilians were killed by the dozens. Whether it was bus bombings, or whether it was attacks on soldiers at bases, this is how they responded to their government that they had no interest in two states for two people. In the days of 94 and 95, leading up to this moment of defibrillation on November 4th, Yitzhak Rabin, who had continued pursuing peace and was not going to be deterred, as the Prime Minister of Israel, he said, "I will fight for peace as if there's no terror, and I will fight terror as if there's no hope for peace." And meanwhile, the right-wing extremists were putting up pictures at rallies where the right wing was running against him, with pictures of Yitzhak Rabin dressed in SS guard uniform with his face. They said that he was responsible for killing the Jewish state. They even dressed up caskets, death caskets, and wrote the word Tzion, which means Zionism, was dead, and they were carrying it around. They were burning effigies of Rabin, and they said, "Rabin, you have blood on your hands. You are no different than Arafat." Rabin, who had served in every war that Israel had had, Rabin, who was the chief of the joint forces of the IDF, who had served as security and prime minister once before, UN ambassador, and had given his life to the security and strength of the state of Israel. They even put keffiyehs on pictures of him and dressed him up to look like Yasser Arafat. Dori Gold, who is an advisor to different political parties in Israel, he said what the atmosphere was like in Israel on November 2nd, November 1st, and the months preceding that of 1995 was like a car driving at full speed on the highway with no water in the radiator. It just kept reading hot, hot, hotter, hotter, until eventually it couldn't work anymore. There was a rally in King Square to counteract a rally that happened the week before in Kikar Tzion, in Jerusalem's Zion Square off Ben Yehuda Street, where tens of thousands of people gathered against Rabin and against Oslo. And the next week, 100,000 people gathered in Tel Aviv to celebrate Oslo and to move forward with peace. At the last minute, around 7:45 at night, Rabin, Prime Minister, decided to go to this rally, which he had no intention of going to in the first place. And he went and he sang a song under what is the municipality building of Tel Aviv in front of hundreds of thousands of people in King Square, Shir LaShalom, the song of peace. He came down from the stairs where his car was waiting, and there an assassin put three bullets into his back. He died a few minutes later at Ichilov Hospital. I contend that the assassin of Rabin didn't only shoot three bullets in his back. He figuratively shot in the air a bullet that defibrillated the state of Israel and shocked them back into a sinus rhythm of unity, the likes of which I haven't seen so recently, and we weren't seeing before. After Rabin's death, people on the left and people on the right sunk their heads around the entire country, from the north to the south, and they said, "Oy lanu, what have we done? What has happened to us? We have taken this far too far. A bona fide leader of the state of Israel, democratically elected, a leader who has given his life to defending the land of Israel, and we disagree with him politically, and now he's murdered by a right-wing extremist." This was such a shock to the Israelis, you should know, that the Shin Bet, the Israeli special forces that fully grabbed and arrested the assassin and threw him against the wall, right after he took the first shots, they spoke to him in Arabic, asking what village he was from and who sent him, meaning, are you part of Fatah? Are you part of Hezbollah? Are you part of Hamas? They asked him four times in Arabic, and he didn't answer. And then he spoke perfect Hebrew back to them. And they almost dropped his body, what they were holding against a wall, out of shock. that same shock that put the heart of a nation back into rhythm. They were shocked that a Jew, an Israeli, someone with a kippah on their head, had done this heinous act, and all of Israel were now again achim v'achot, brothers and sisters, not divided by political aspirations, not divided by what the future of reality they thought it would be, but united in the grief of their elected official, united. United in their shame and embarrassment, united in what they realized they had taken too far on all sides. The assassin not only shot a bullet into Rabin's back that killed him, excuse me, the assassin shot a bullet that defibrillated the nation of Israel back into a unified rhythm. That rhythm was felt through the burial of Rabin, and for months, and some would argue even years later. If you go to Israel today, and we celebrate the beauty of the land, there are some internal debates that have become so hot and so strong that many would argue it's turning in to October of 1995 again. Debates on who is a Jew, debates on the Kotel, debates on how to move forward with peace. There's a movie that came out that, thank you very much. There's a movie that came out that perhaps you have seen in school or as an ABC after school special. It was actually created to be an after school special for ABC, but it was made into a family series show in the days when there were only three networks, and in the days when people actually gathered around the television with their family, knowing well in advance of what would be there. Before Hulu and before Netflix, before iTunes, all of these things, people watched television based on one show. Now there's so many shows, I'm actually like suffocating from how many there are. And the show that was supposed to be an after-school special for kids to watch was actually turned into an evening show, and the show is called, this movie was called The Wave. The Wave, excuse me, The Wave is based on a true story. It's a true story of a professor and a teacher was teaching in high school who in the late 60s was asked the question, how did the Holocaust happen? How did Nazis follow an order that was so heinous and wrong? Thank you very much. How did that happen? How did they follow the wrong thing? So this teacher in 1967 decided to create this group in the school and to create a special wave that looked like this, that everyone would do who was part of the pact. And kids who were on the fringe and kids who were different all became leaders in this group, passing each other the wave. And some were in the group and some were out of the group. The experiment lasted for 10 days until there was a moment of physical violence that happened between someone who was out of the group and someone was in the group. It was a moment that stopped everyone in their tracks, including the head of school. And the teacher seized that moment and he said, you asked a question 12 days ago in class. How could the Holocaust have happened? How could fanaticism have happened? How could people have followed such heinous orders? And in 12 short days, look what we have done to ostracize some and to embrace others, to create between haves and have-nots, included and not included. Look at those who wear the pin and give the wave and think about that famous or infamous Nazi salute. At that moment, when that violence happened, it defibrillated the class and the school, and they all came to focus on not only answering the question, but the responsibility to be wired differently for the rest of their lives than they could ever be following in the footsteps of fanatics, to ask questions, to have a moral compass, to follow good versus bad. Those moments took the erratic rhythms of a high school and put them back into a sinus rhythm, into a regular rhythm that they could all appreciate. The Wave is still considered to be one of the greatest movies today to explain the contagiousness and infectiousness of fascism and critical thinking. and its dangers on society. So why do I share this all with you today? I share it all with you because I think we're walking down the halls giving each other waves in our society. And I think it's October of 1995. And I'm worried, really worried, about the divide in our world, not only in our country, not only in Israel, but in our world. I'm worried about our inability to see within others possibility, hope, and common denominators. Now, this is not to say, and I want to be very clear, this is not to say that if we have passionate disagreements with elected officials or possible elected officials or those running for office, and we disagree with them, that we should sit quietly by the sidelines, that we should just give golf applauses. That's not my style and not what I advocate for. We should be passionate in our disagreement with people we disagree with. That's what makes democracies democracies. That's what makes Judaism Judaism, that Hillel and Shammai would go at each other's throats for what they thought was the word of God. Where the difference is that Hillel and Shammai, when they left the Beit Midrash, the house of study, they would walk as friends to the park. Their children would date each other and marry each other, and they would participate in visiting the sick together. That their differences were contained to just those differences, but the ability to see the humanity in each other far transcended those differences that lived in the Beit Midrash. And if we have differences that are political, or we have differences that are religious, or we have aspirational differences, that is beautiful and something that we should envelop and embrace. But to take those differences and to extend them to all aspects of another's life is criminal. And when we get to the place where we're starting to paint people in particular colors solely by who they voted for, or what television station they watch, or what they believe in, or who they are advocating for, or even a team that is their favorite, we are engaging in October of 1995 rhetoric. And what I worry for is what Frank Santayana said. Those who do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it. It's not much different than what I said to Michael and Eric today, that we have a moral responsibility to listen to our history and incorporate it into ourselves so that it doesn't repeat itself in the negative form. In the most simple ways, it's the way our parents would tell us when we're horsing around. Yeah, it's all fun and games until someone loses an eye. It's all fun and games, the rhetoric, until a prime minister is assassinated. It's all fun and games in high school until another kid is hurt and excluded. It's all fun and games until we start a verbal fight or an online fight, or we no longer put that person on our mailing lists. That's not what we should be striving for on this new year. That's not the goal that we should have. Because while not a physician, I would imagine that the heart can only withstand so many shocks. And a people can only withstand so many defibrillations. And a nation can only withstand so many defibrillations. And a generation can only withstand so many times of seeing the paddles. And then eventually, it all falls. And they can't be revived. In the history of time, 25 years ago since Oslo, 23 years ago since the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, is a blink of the eye. It's a blink of the eye. And if we fall back into these particular behaviors of division without seeing the possibilities that are in front of us, and our rhetoric and behavior follow suit, then we lie in the danger zone of putting our hearts off rhythm again and asking the question, can it be shocked back into rhythm? Well, that's not a guess I'd want to take with my life. It's not a guess I'd want to take with any of your lives. And it's not a guess we should be taking with our community, our country, our world, and our shared future. On this Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, this time between of Shabbat Shuvah, Let us all pause and think about that moment. Let us all learn from our past. Let us all strive in the most organic and natural ways to ensure that we find the commonality in our brothers and sisters, that we appreciate the divides but walk hand in hand when visiting the sick, participating in mitzvot, celebrating happy occasions, that we not set ourselves up for a moment of arrhythmia and find in the organic way a moment to bring us back to a shared heartbeat. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Page 184, please rise as the chazan leads us in the Chatzi Kaddish.
יתגדל ויתקדש שמי רבה בעלמא דברה חירותי וימליך מלכות